Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
This is John Rocha, one third of the Geek Buddies, with this awesome ad for you. If you like this show and you want to make your own, and some of you have reached out and asked us about making your own podcast, well, let me tell you about Anchor. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And now you can even add any song from Spotify directly to your episodes. The possibilities are endless for what you can create, whether it's music analysis, your own radio show, or something the world's never heard before. Go ahead and let your freak flag fly. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and so many more places. And you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Take it from us here at the Geek Buddies. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Now, on with the Geek Buddies show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a spoiler review for What If here from the
Geek Buddies. Hey!
Thanks for joining us. We are on the precipice or on the cusp of the last episode of the first season of What If. This is episode 8. So much happened. What If Ultron won? We're going to break this whole thing down. This is a spoiler review, so if you haven't seen the episode, go watch the episode, come back and keep watching this review and enjoy our back and forths about it. Let's introduce ourselves first. I am the Outlaw John Rocha, writer, producer, and host here on the Outlaw Nation and the Geek Buddies. Mike.
I am Michael Vogel. I'm a writer and producer of animated TV shows and movies,
and currently has Strawberry Shortcake out there for you to watch on YouTube.
And currently has Strawberry Shortcake out there on YouTube that you can check out on the Strawberry Shortcake YouTube page. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. And writing one of the some of the episodes and proposed one of the brand new characters for Strawberry Shortcake right down there, Shannon McClung.
And this is Shannon McClung. I'm an animation writer and a television actor, where you will eventually be able to see me writing something on Strawberry Shortcake. I think it's going to be in October. Ooh. But Mike would be able to tell you for sure.
It will be. Your first episode will be in October because it is a Halloween-themed episode.
I should have thought. It was a while ago. I don't remember.
There you go. Well, joining us and eclipsing all of our accomplishments at such a young age and going to accomplish so much more, I'm sure, is Emma Fife finally back to hang out with us.
I know.
How are you?
Been a doozy. Look, you don't accomplish stuff in life by not having last minute crazy meetings and things come up, which has been the story of my life for the past several weeks. It is great to be back. And also, what an episode to come back for.
Seriously.
Ooh, yes.
Because, you know, we all thought, obviously, that the sort of connecting thread through all of these is this idea of there being this big multiverse of Marvel-ness out there. But it's all even more connected than we realize.
That's true. And it does certainly come show us that later on in the episode. We're going to break this whole thing down. First, let's go around the horn and give our overall thoughts on this episode. Mike, what'd you think about this episode 8 here? What if Ultron had won?
Kind of echoing Emma's thoughts, I think we all knew that this was going to be the first of like the two-parter where everything kind of connected. But even knowing that that was going to happen, holy shit, what a way to do it. You know, I think that I tweeted when the episode came out that my rankings of threat levels for MCU villains has now drastically changed.
Yeah.
They did such a good job. You know, each one of these episodes kind of takes the, well, what if this little thing happened and what would change?
Right.
But the, oh yeah, what if Ultron had actually made it into the Vision body that he had built for himself? And you're like, oh yeah, there's just no stopping him now. This is this is batshit crazy. So it was great. The animation, as always, was spectacular, even more spectacular than usual in some moments. And also just a thousand little details that if you're a hardcore MCU fan, if you're a fan of these movies and you've watched them a billion times like we all have, a thousand little details that made what would have been a great episode anyway even more enjoyable, even better. So I'm thrilled, and I can't wait till next week to see the assembled team to defend the multiverse.
Mm-hmm. Well, we might be getting an extra long episode. I don't know. Emma, anything more to add on your overall thoughts on this episode?
Just that I really enjoyed Clint and Natasha in this episode. I really loved their interactions, and this continues to do what I have really enjoyed about the What If series overall, which is giving these great moments to these characters who we got a taste of in the MCU films, but I don't know, for some reason, this little TV show seems to do them all justice even more so than the films.
That's a great point. Shannon, this is, as Emma mentioned, Natasha Romanoff and Clint Barton teaming up to destroy killer robot Ultron following a cataclysmic event. This seems to have the approach seems to be about satisfying people who had complained about the use of Ultron in Age of Ultron, who had complained about getting a little bit more with Hawkeye and with Black Widow. Do you feel that they have satisfied that section of the fandom after having watched this episode?
Well, I can't say whether or not they have satisfied that section of the fandom. I can say that they certainly satisfied me. I mean, I thought Ultron was a great bad guy in a meh movie. And watching what he is able to do as a result of what he's able to gather throughout this episode, it was awesome. And I mean, this episode provided a very specific brain fry of a voice that really sounds like James Spader coming out of a character where we're used to hearing Paul Bettany. So it was just such a cool design. I mean, I agree with Vogel on the animation. I thought some of the acting in between Clint and Nat was some of the best animated acting that they have done thus far, just from their facial expressions. But the design of Infinity Stoned Ultron was just the cool. I mean, he looks so otherworldly, so demonic almost. I mean, just awesome. Awesome.
Ultra Vision. I don't know. That's what I like to call him.
Ultra Vision.
That ain't Vision. That's Ultron.
Well, that's all of Vision's powers with Ultron's mindset. But yeah, anyway, we'll get into all that. We're going to break it down and spoil it here section by section. We're going to break it down into four sections. So if you have not watched the episode, this is your last spoiler warning. Go and watch it, and then come back and join us here as we go forward. So 3, 2, 1, that's all you get. All right, let's go. What If Ultron 1, written by Matthew Chauncey, directed by Brian Andrews. As we start off, the Watcher tells us we've been here before, a universe in the final days of destruction. He reveals that this particular story, though, breaks his heart, and little did we know what he was teasing us about as we went along in this episode. We cut to Black Widow and Hawkeye. They're fighting off some Ultron sentries in a bombed out wasteland that we find out later is Russia. She says they have 90 seconds. She apparently has the most indestructible motorcycle in the world. Barton has an invisibility cloak and is constantly shooting these sentries down. He's clearly been reading his Harry Potter, and he gets his robot arm shot off by one of the sentries. Interesting. So it's Barton who has the robot arm in this particular universe. Wanda saves him and makes some kind of pun about giving him a hand. And they are worried that the Ultron sentries, if they hadn't taken these Ultron sentries out with a few seconds to spare, they would have contacted the Ultron hive mind. And as I said, we realize there for the next shot that we're in Russia. And then the Watcher takes us back to the creation of Ultron in the MCU. And in this universe, though, he tells us, Ultron got the Vision body, whereas in the universe we have, he did not. And he laid waste to the planet. He absolutely killed all the Avengers. We see him kill Tony Stark and then set off the nukes that destroys the entire planet, much to Thunderbolt Ross's shock and horror. Then we cut to Black Widow and Hawkeye seeing the missiles falling as Clint whispers, Laura. Ultron is in peace after he's done what he's done. And just then Thanos shows up out of one of his portals, and he is quickly split in half as Ultron takes the Infinity Stones and becomes, as I like to call him, Ultra Vision. He sees worlds beyond his own that need him. He uses the stone to create more sentries and sends them out to attack Asgard, the Sovereign, Sakaar, poor Jeff Goldblum, Ego, and Xandar. And it is in Xandar when he is absolutely demolishing the planet, where he is attacked by Captain Marvel. She makes a Terminator crack. They battle all the way down to the core of Xandar, and it looks like she might win, but Ultron decimates the planet and all the other planets in the vicinity. And he realizes, as he's holding Captain Marvel's dead body on a floating piece of planet rock, that it is done, and he is sad. Let's stop there. Michael, what a way to open this episode of seeing the full breadth of the Ultron power that we have known in the comics, seeing it now finally fully in motion here in this opening for this episode. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it's like almost like they're showing off. Like this opening scene, I mean, they just went for it. Like this opening scene was an action sequence that would have been on par with most animated shows, like big third act battle. I mean, it was like all out. You had the sentries, you had Natasha on the motorcycle, you had Clint, like you said, he's got the robot arm, he's got the cloaking technology. And he also, this is one of those little details that I was talking about. I love that they gave him his Ronin haircut from Endgame.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Apparently, when his wife and kids die, he goes and gets a haircut. That is his thing. Like, in it, that is Clint's post-apocalyptic look, and he is sticking with it. But I love that, you know, particularly because, as you said, you know, I mean, like, him losing his family is something that, like, comes up again for him. It's one of those key pieces in any universe. That's one of the most important things for Clint Barton. And so even something as little as, like, choosing that hairstyle for him kind of speaks to where he's at emotionally, which we dive into a little bit further later on. And then, yeah, I love going back. I love every time they go back, and each one has done it a little bit differently. I mean, sometimes they use still images. Sometimes they go full animation. In the Thor one, they did, like, the storybook images. But I love going back and kind of seeing all the moments of Ultron. It does remind you how ridiculously stupid Tony Stark can be at times, which he is in every universe. And also, What If has reminded us that apparently they just want to kill Tony Stark as many times as possible. He is the Kenny of South Park of the What If series. Tony Stark, I think, might have died in the What If series. I think Robert Downey Jr. said, I don't want to do the voice. And they said, fine.
Great.
We're just going to kill you repeatedly. I did miss, as soon as Ultron started talking, I miss James Spader, because James Spader is amazing. I think he is, to Shannon's point, one of the reasons that Ultron was an amazing villain in a meh movie. But gotta give credit to Ross Marquand for kind of really nailing that James Spader sort of tone. And he's now 2 for 2 in his megalomaniacal villains. Like, he has now stepped in to be Red Skull 2.0 and Ultron 2.0.
Right.
And then I think I screamed all by myself when Thanos walked out and Ultron was just like, oh, fascinating, and just split the man. The man who split the universe in half got split in half, which is really, really poetic justice. And then, when he says he's going to bring about peace throughout the entire known universe and goes through, and you just get like that every single beat of all the planets that we love, the characters we love, seeing them all get destroyed, like, it was amazing. It's cool from a nerdy standpoint. Like, oh, it's all the Easter eggs. It's the Sovereign. It's Xandar. It's this. But, like, it also, if you're a fan of the MCU, it really is affecting. Like, not like I was emotional about it. I was still in my holy shit, how cool is this mode. But you're like, man, it really does get across just how powerful he is. And then kind of, you know, Captain Marvel being that cherry on top. I did really love her Terminator joke, her Skynet joke.
Yeah.
Mainly because it was, I've seen the Killer Robot movie and I don't think it needs a sequel. It's another little thing. Because Carol Danvers left Earth before Terminator 2 came out. She only saw Terminator 1 and doesn't know that there's a bunch of Terminator sequels, many of which are not good. So I thought that was really funny. And then him lying there, him kind of having his moment where his program was complete was amazing. And the moment that happened right after it that we'll get to, I guess, on the next one was even more amazing.
Yeah. Emma, so much to ponder here at this beginning. I mean, we're seeing the full breadth of Ultron's power. We're seeing the desperation in the Watcher's voice initially. He says this one breaks his heart. And we're seeing the camaraderie and companionship between Black Widow and Hawkeye. And Mike's right to point out the haircut. That's really an indication of where he goes to grieve. How did you think, what did you think about how this episode started?
Well, I think it was a strong choice because, again, it was a little reminiscent in some ways of the zombies episode of you have these people who are the survivors in the event of an apocalypse. But in this case, the apocalypse was Ultron. It wasn't zombies. So, but one of the things that I really enjoy is this idea of you've got, you know, Natasha and Clint, neither of whom have any superpowers. They're just really good fighters and good at what they do. And I love seeing the two of them as survivors and seeing how that friendship and camaraderie is the thing that's like clearly carrying them through this, because, you know, the, and we address later on where Clint is at a little bit emotionally as far as everybody being gone and whatnot. But I think it was a really strong start to kind of just drop you right into the middle of it instead of giving us the lead up, which we end up getting afterwards. It's a, okay, this is what things look like right now. Here's how we got here. And then there is a little bit of pondering of like, okay, so he's gotten everything that he wanted and did everything he needed to do. So why are Clint and Natasha still contending with like the Ultron hive effectively? And we learn exactly why a little afterwards in regards to what Ultron is able to achieve. Definitely as far as his own motivations and what, why he's doing what he's doing, and oh, this is the only way that we're going to have peace is basically if we obliterate everything. You know, that's an interesting point of view. It's more psychotic than Thanos's point of view, which was let's eliminate half the population. So truly, but again, it's like, I like that they're so clear about what Ultron's motives are, as opposed to being like, yeah, he's just here to destroy everything for no reason. And it's like, well, no, like the only way that we can like truly always have like peace and balance is if we just get rid of everything. And yeah, I was, look, my heart really broke for Jeff Goldblum. I was so, I was so expecting that.
He looks so sad. He just looks so sad.
He worked so hard to get that planet. Yeah, I mean, this Shannon, the intro of this is basically laying the groundwork for what we're going to get throughout the whole movie, right? The old school versus the new school, analog versus digital. This is the battle. The two characters that have been the most vilified by the MCU fans for not having powers, Black Widow and Hawkeye, are the ones left standing to try to save the world and try to stop Ultron, this ultimate digital creation that can absolutely wipe them out at no problem. But they've somehow eluded him by going old school, by going ground ground floor and in their approach to things. So that's going to play itself out as we go along. Did you like that they chose these two to be the leads of this particular episode here to battle Ultron?
Oh, I totally did. I mean, and more towards the end, which we'll get to, because we get a nice reversal of something that's already happened in the movie.
Oh, I know.
I love that M. Vogelbaum pointed out poor Jeff Goldblum. No one's talking about poor Korg. He's the guy that was up front that got annihilated.
Korg went down fighting. Grandmaster just kind of stood there and was like, well, this sucks.
Yeah.
And well, what's he going to do? The laser stick? I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. The melting stick? Hey.
Vogel's love of the Terminator joke. So a little while ago, Vogel and I co-wrote a script together that may or may not see the light of day one day. And he actually put this very same joke in. So if you get to see this project one day and you hear a joke like, hey, they got that from What If, I can testify Michael Vogel came up with that joke about 18 months ago. I loved the opening. Thought it was super cool. Definitely noticed the hair as well. In traumatic times, Clint does something extreme with his hair. Watching how effective Ultron is with one Infinity Stone to Thanos' five kind of gives you an idea of just how powerful and how villainous Ultron is, that he does not waste any time.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, oh, look at this. All right, you're done.
Well, I think that's what it is. And I think that, you know, one of the things that made Thanos such a strong, interesting villain, which I was not expecting in the MCU. Exactly. Especially on the heels of Black Panther, where you had Killmonger, who was this very sympathetic villain who you totally understood why he was doing what he was doing. To me, Thanos could have very easily been a, you know, big, burly, mustache-twirly villain. Yep. Exactly. But he really wasn't. And there was a lot of pain in terms of him sacrificing Gamora and whatnot, and like there is humanity to him, and you see with Ultron a villain who has no humanity.
Yeah,
no, I mean, he is, everything is a means to an end, and What I thought was interesting in this universe is that apparently Thanos did not have to destroy Xandar to get the Power Stone.
Oh.
Because in Infinity War, they talk about he had already destroyed Xandar to get the Power Stone.
Not to get super nerdy, but I was trying to figure this out. Because if you look at the lineup of MCU movies, I kind of like paused it when Thanos came out. And I was like, well...
Where is this?
Is the Power Stone still on Morag? Like... What's going on? And where would the Power Stone be? Because like Ultron, kind of those nukes went off way earlier than when Infinity War would have happened. Like Hulk wouldn't even have been on Sakaar yet. Like he was. Right. Well, he probably got decimated. Like so you sort of in the what if world, you sort of like it's the butterfly effect of like, well, the Hulk never went to Sakaar. And then Thor would still have been on Asgard. So did he get... So, you know, you sort of like have to say, like, where was everything?
Yep. What happened? Because Quill did not get... I'm assuming Quill did not get picked up by Yondu in this. So the Power Stone would have been on Morag. And Ronan got there first.
Doesn't none of this matter? Because it's a whole different universe. So nothing you guys are talking about could have actually happened.
It could have happened.
Sure. The stones could have been anywhere. The stones could have been anywhere, is what I'm saying.
It could have, but the general conceit of what if and the fun of talking about it is that each of these universes is the same as ours, except for one change. Like, there could have been other changes, but in general, it's fun to just sort of like, look, it doesn't matter. Like, Thanos got the stones, like, he did what he did, and it was fine.
Yeah.
And so it all works, it all tracks, I'm sure, but like, it's just fun to sort of be like, well, where were they? Because, you know, you don't really know timeline wise how long it took.
Well, because Guardians took place, and if we're going off release date before the jump, Guardians took place in 2014, Age of Ultron in 2015. So it would have made sense that Thanos got the Power Stone from Morag.
But Yondu still would have picked up Peter because he picked up Peter earlier than that.
Not to get
nervous. Oh, yeah, yeah.
But did he, though? Like, he may not have. This could have been a reality where he also picked up T'Challa.
Are we good?
But didn't we see? We're good. But didn't we see Peter when he was obliterating everybody? Definitely.
Oh yeah, Emma's right.
He was definitely Star-Lord. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. All right. I think we nailed it. All right. Let's move on.
glad we worked that one out, guys. This is why you guys.
It's like Charlie Day.
You can put a timestamp on this.
This is why you guys come to the Geek Buddies for this scintillating content right here.
I'll cut this out and put it up on Twitter. All right, the watcher picks up where we just left off here, and I cut it here on purpose because I want this leads into the bigger thing that's happening in the second section here. The watcher picks up where we left off and tells us that the realization that Ultron's mission was over nearly broke the machine. He tells us that he has no purpose and he's destined to spend eternity all alone, but that he's also attained a certain level of consciousness. And what the watcher discovers, much to his horror, is that level of consciousness means that he can hear and see the watcher. Now, the only other person that we've seen through the whole thing that can also see, or actually probably hear the watcher rather, not see, was dark Doctor Strange.
Interesting.
Evil Doctor Strange. The Watcher is startled and ponders what damage Ultravision can do to the multiverse. We see the Watcher's location, which is pretty cool, kind of crystal area, respected. He claims the machine is not all powerful yet and that there is one hope. And we cut to that hope, which is Black Widow and Hawkeye. And of all places, the KGB archives. I love Barton's reaction here going, Oh boy. And the Watcher is watching them, literally watching them in the room. They're going through each box to find something to dismantle Ultravision. We cut to multiple boxes later. They're strewn across the floor. Black Widow finds, I think that's Red Guardian's Captain America's shield.
Oh, yeah.
Basically. Mm-hmm. And then Hawkeye grabs a box as the Watcher says the answer is in the box next to him, tries to kind of encourage him or motivate him. It's almost like he's watching a sporting event. He's like, no, go to the left. And he doesn't quite grab the box. Then Hawkeye gives up, and him and Black Widow have a back and forth about quitting, about how he's tired of fighting, and he doesn't want Black Widow to make jokes about this situation. They're in some trouble here. But Black Widow says they need to find an AI that can counteract Ultron's code. It must be analog. And then Black Widow grabs that box to the left and finds Zola's file. The Watcher says there's still hope, but just then Ultron shows up, crashes through there, and messes with the Watcher. All right, let's stop there.
Emma, what a moment.
What a moment.
So much going on here. The fact that Ultron can actually communicate with the Watcher and get through to the Watcher's location, and then Black Widow and Hawkeye finding that Zola file, really Black Widow, finding that Zola file and going forward with it. What do you think about this section of the show?
I mean, of all things Zola, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, I was just like, okay, great. Give me some Toby Jones. No, it was great. I think that, you know, and again, like, it is, I was touching a little bit on this idea of the humanity of Thanos, but also you see this sort of interesting parallel of you've got Ultron, who has, it's all about these people like trying to find a reason to continue to live. And it's like, because we're getting into the conversation here with Hawkeye and Black Widow of, I'm tired of fighting. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want you to make jokes about this. Like, we're really in trouble. And like, is it worth going on and trying to save this? Or is this a lost cause at this point? And that's something that we're also seeing the Watcher struggle with as he's watching them. And he's saying, oh, you're so close. You're so close. It's just right. It's right there. Should I intervene? You know what I mean? The reveal too of Ultron being able to hear the Watcher, I thought was incredibly well done, because it was just the Watcher doing his regular narration. And then suddenly Ultron's making commentary on it. And you realize that these two worlds are converging and, oh no, we're really in a lot of trouble now, because the Watcher has been there presiding over all of these multiverses. And while he's not making sure that like that universe doesn't become our universe, there is a level of control that he has in terms of watching so that there is no interference. However, now you have Ultron, who clearly is able to interfere.
Yeah. Yeah. And clearly wants to interfere. And we see later on, he's going to go after the Watcher for not interfering in their back and forth a little bit later on in the show. Shannon, am I crazy? I kind of respect Ultron a little bit, just the way I respected Thanos. I don't want to open that can of worms again with Vogel. But I absolutely respect the fact that Thanos is very clear on what he... I'm sorry, that Ultron is very clear on what he wants to do, what he needs to do. And he, and that's one thing that is similar to the previous MCU approach to this character. He says in that back and forth with Vision near the end that humans are flawed, naturally flawed. They will eventually kill each other in the long run. So why not just do it now? So clearly that programming is still very much in his head, and it's spread out now to every planet, every species. He's very clear about what he wants to do. And now he's achieved a whole nother level of consciousness and now wants to possibly, as we'll see in the next section, go after the multiverse. So am I wrong to like this guy a little bit in his single-mindedness?
I'm just going to say I'm not visiting you on Hayward Island this weekend. I'm going to take a weekend off. I'm going to keep my charcoal.
That's fine.
At my place. But look, I mean, this is the turn of a character who is succeeding. I mean, it's you know, it's, he's always trying to find something new to conquer, because even when he talks about, when Ultron talks about, like, okay, peace, he doesn't look restful. Like, he looks like he needs something else to do. And it's interesting because I feel like Hawkeye's kind of the same way. Like, what was interesting about Hawkeye during the films after the snap is there was no one for him. The person that was responsible for taking away his family, he could not get revenge on that person. So he took out that revenge on anyone he could. Yes. With this, in this universe, he knows who's responsible. It's Ultron. But, you know, when you have a never-ending supply of robots, at some point, like, he's like, like he said, I'm tired. Like, I can't, I'm fighting the same guy again, again, and again, and again. So you totally get where, Clint's head is at this moment. Natasha is someone who has grown up with trauma and who knows how to navigate it.
Yes,
and that's why she can pull out that shield and be like, hey, is this my color? And Clint doesn't want to joke. I mean, this is a guy who is just operating at a loss this entire time. And something else that I thought, because we're dealing with such a serious moment there, but you get an almost kind of comedic performance from Jeffrey Wright. It's a really interesting juxtaposition to go from not making light of things, Clint being deadly serious, and the ultimate sort of being in the situation, having this sort of not jokey performance, but a little bit of levity.
Yeah.
No. So yeah, great section.
Well, he says, "What the hell is this?" That's what he says. Mikey, there's a line in Die Hard. Hans Gruber says, "When Alexander the Great saw the breadth of his domain, he wept, for there were no more worlds to conquer." Is this where Vision is at the end of this section of the of this episode? And then now, when he gets the contact with Watcher, he understands there are now more worlds to conquer. So has joy crept back into his world?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about, first of all, I've been friends with you for 20 years, but yes, your love and respect for sociopaths does concern me slightly.
I never said love. I never said love.
You respect the hell out of them.
I appreciate the hell out of them. Single-mindedness. We're all so conflicted and we question ourselves all of our lives. Yeah, they admire of someone who's very clear about what they're doing. I don't know.
The thing that I love about Ultron in Age of Ultron, and the thing that I love about Ultron here, is Ultron is lying to himself. Ultron is convinced that he is a program that has a single-minded purpose and must just fulfill that purpose, and is denying the fact that he is actually more human than he would like to admit and is a sociopath. And particularly when he gets the Mind Stone, because Vision, as we all know, because we've all wept over Vision for the past year and a half, Vision is more human than most of us. Vision is capable of love. Vision is capable of all the emotions we are capable of. And now Ultron has that Mind Stone. He has the ability to have feelings and all the things that humanity and beings across the galaxies have, and he's still pretending that he is a program that has to fulfill his purpose. He just wants to destroy everything because he's crazy. So that is who he is. The moment is so great when the Watcher kind of comes in, when Ultron is sitting there, pondering there's nothing left for him to do, and starts talking. The second that the Watcher opens his mouth, Ultron's eyes pop open, and he starts sort of searching around because you're like close on his eyes. And the acting is really great because he's thinking, he's processing, and like the slow turn, and he's like, who's saying that? Who's talking? And yeah, Jeffrey Wright really goes for the comedy when he says, "What the hell is this?"
Yeah.
I was like, and there's this thing, and like this whole scene and the scene that you guys were talking about that comes up right after this, there's something really fun. We're so used to the Watcher kind of talking in this third person narrative as he is telling us a story about what happens. So anytime he breaks the narrative and becomes much more human, it's really, really enjoyable. Like, there's really something about him like that. Or in the moment in the archives when Clint's about to give up, and he's like, "No, it's right there. It's what you," and he like really wants to intervene, but he took the vow and he's struggling on what to do. Like, it was just really, really enjoyable. Kind of to what you guys were saying about kind of the similarities with the characters, there's something about having the two most human Avengers in this episode, where you have a sociopathic robot that is really more human than he thinks he is, and a watcher who gets more human moments in this than he's gotten previously, where everybody's being a little bit more human in this episode. But yeah, all the "you're almost there, you've almost got it," and Clint's whole moment. I mean, like when he says, you know, when he, like we said, he's got the Ronin haircut at the beginning. When the nukes go off, his first thought is Laura. And then you get this moment where, you know, Nat's trying to like keep things light, and he's like, "Look," he's like, my will to live meter is about zero. Like, he's like, I can't do this. And you're like, "Yeah, man, like I get it. Like you got nothing left." Like, he's going on fumes. And it's really, really, really lovely. And then to Emma's point, you're like, "Fucking Zola."
Fucking
Zola. And like, what's great about it is it totally makes sense. Like,
oh, yeah. Oh, it makes total sense.
It's one of those great moments where it's a left field thing. Like, the solution is so out of left field, you're like, "Wait, what?" And then you're like, "Actually, yeah, this totally tracks. This makes sense." But yeah, every moment, like to Emma's point, like when the Watcher is in the room and the room sort of goes like this and he hears Ultron sort of whispering, like, they just do such a good job of making Ultron such a massive threat.
Yeah. Agreed.
And also, just like I was thinking about the sociopath point, which is that, like, that's like the definition of a psychopath, is the fact that he is completely denying that like there is any right. sort of humanity in him, that he is so singular minded. And he's like, no, this is what I am. Like, he truly yeah. does not question himself.
Right.
Yeah.
Something to be admired. A sociopath.
Something to be admired. I
has the thoughts. A psychopath acts on the thoughts. There's the difference, I think. Someone broke it down to me.
I'm pretty sure that sociopaths and psychopaths are actually the same thing. It has been ruled in recent years.
I'll have to do some research on that. I'll ask Ultron about it. All right, let's move on to our next section here. Black Widow and Hawkeye head to an underground base as Black Widow explains how Zola has put his brain in a bunch of analog computers. Very interesting, very similar to what we got in Winter Soldier with Black Widow and Captain America, except this time she's going down with Hawkeye, who's also who has the mechanical arm, which is what Bucky had. So interesting Captain America connections here as we're going forward. They power everything up, and we get a similar Winter Soldier scene with Zola showing up on the computer. Pretty awesome stuff. They give him the 411 of what they need from him. Zola resists helping them, saying, why would your needs ever match up with my needs? And then Barton threatens to kill his mainframe with a little bit of, was it gasoline or water or whatever it is?
Water.
I think it's water.
Just that simple, water. All right, anyway, and that's when Zola concedes and accepts helping them. Black Widow calls Ultron Sentry and orders a pizza, which leads the sentries to find them and come after them. Barton downloads Zola's code into an arrow flash drive. Is there anything he can't do with these fucking arrows? And their plan is to shoot it into a sentry and wait for 90 seconds as it uploads into the Ultron mainframe and disables Ultron and all the sentries, possibly. Zola says, oh, well, they warn Zola about it. And he says, well, he will not be the first genocidal maniac I've had to contend with. Yeah. After they download it, they torch the computer, and Black Widow gets certain joy out of saying, burn it. The sentries show up. Hawkeye shoots one with the arrow that has the code on it, and they start attacking all the other sentries as they drag that one sentry with the code behind a closed door. The sentry stands up with the code, and it is Zola speaking through the sentry there, and Black Widow promptly shoots his legs off. Zola, which really pisses him off, and Hawkeye assures him, hey, we're doing this because we don't trust you. Zola achieves supposedly the hive connection, but the Ultron hive mind is out of range, so the sentries keep coming through the door. They escape up to a shaft ahead of the surface. As the sentries break through, they fight them off for as long as they can with some cool new gadgets. Hawkeye gets knocked off by one of the sentry's shots, and Black Widow grabs his arm, saves him there by his hand. Very similar to what we got in Avengers Endgame, but Hawkeye says, I told you I'm tired of fighting. Let's go, and sacrifices himself to kill the sentries and buy them some time. There's an explosion as Black Widow and what I call Zolatron jump out, and she does her posing pose and accepts the fact that Clint has died. And a great distance shot of her on her knees, accepting the fact that Clint is gone. Shannon, I love this section of the damn show, and it had the greatest picture in the What If so far, with Hawkeye slowly descending as he's shooting a far away shot. I've clipped it out and put it on my phone because I don't want to forget that shot. Very similar to the way I felt when Thor was flying in after he'd done all the lightning into those people on the Rainbow Bridge. So talk to me about this section of the show. What stood out for you? What did you like? What did you think about how they handled this?
Well, I mean, it's also reminiscent of the Cap shot in Endgame, the one man versus the army.
Which was, again, just a great,
beautiful shot. Not the first time that Clint has used a flash drive arrow, because he used one in Avengers. Like, that's when he was under Loki's control. Like, he shot that and was able to take down the helicarrier. The great thing about What If is there are just some of these secrets that are being revealed through the use of the multiverse. And one of them in this one is Clint's middle name. The fact that his middle name is Francis.
He doesn't want to talk about it.
Named after his meemaw.
Family name. The Zola scene, I mean, who doesn't love Toby Jones? He's just so fantastic. And the moment that Nat makes him aware of the danger of Clint spilling a little bit of water on him, the Looney Tune takes that camera was doing back and forth, again, so satisfying. That's what Marvel just does so well, is being able to have these heavier stakes driven scenes, but having that moment of levity, having that moment of comedy. And it's not forced. It's not pushed. They're not going for a joke. Like, this is something that that camera, that processing system is actually taking into account. Like, oh God, how are we going to get out of this? The actual action scene itself, just awesome. I love the use of the design of when he gets the flash drive arrow in Ultron's eye, and then suddenly the underlighting is green. So right away, I mean, that's done for us. So we can be like, oh, that's Zola right there. But also just design wise, it just looks super cool. And then watching them trying to escape up that silo, very reminiscent of Civil War, but with much less hope in this area. And yeah, when Clint does sacrifice himself, when we get that reversal of the scene in Endgame, you know, it's beautiful. And it did, yes, that shot that you talked about, that one versus a million shot. I mean, that's a framed piece of artwork that should be on a wall. And yeah, watching the kind of despair that Nat feels, that not only am I alone now, I just lost my best friend.
Yeah.
Really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike, thoughts on this section here as we got more with Black Widow and with Hawkeye, but also realizing the hive mind is not something they can connect to and what that means for the overall story here.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, as far as the hive mind things go, that's the reason why you had that 90 second beat at the beginning where Natasha was like, we have 90 seconds in that opening battle, is because it takes the hive time. It takes the hive 90 seconds to re-upload up to main Ultron and get the new direction. So we know that that's how long it takes, and that's why it's important for this scene. But the other thing that I loved about this scene, as we're talking about all the references, is this isn't just reminiscent of the scene in Civil War. Like, they are literally in the exact same silo. Like, they are in the base that they go to in Captain America Civil War.
Mm-hmm. Is that correct? Because she says that when they were with Clint.
That was Winter Soldier.
Gotcha. Okay.
No. Armanzola is in the base at Camp Lehigh, where she finds him with Steve Rogers.
Right.
But then she goes, there is a Armanzola at a Hydra a Hydra facility in Siberia.
Gotcha. So this is
and
the
Hydra facility in Siberia is from Civil War. And when you go in, when they go in there, you actually can see the glowing tubes where all of the other super soldier serum people were. I mean, it's definitely the exact same place. And then Armanzola is there. Armanzola is a dick. He is a computer dick. I love it. It's so great. He's so pompous, and I just love, like, he uploads and he's like, ah, Natasha Romanoff. And he literally is like, he goes, I bet you have many questions, Fraulein, about who and how and what. And she's like, no, I already met another version of you already. Like, I know this. We need your help. And he's like, why would I help you? You are a shield. I am. And then Clint is like, a lot has happened. You are really behind on the times. Like, I love this guy who thinks he's like this pompous ass and has no clue what's going on at all. Kind of to Shannon's point, it's like they're not trying to make Armanzola stupid. Like, they're not making him an idiot. But it just, this program wouldn't know this stuff. And so it makes sense. And it also happens to be really, really, really funny. But yeah, so then to your point, like, they upload the thing, they're waiting the 90 seconds. The Zolatron, as you call him, is like,
yes. Zolatron, yes.
3, 2, 1, and it should work. And it doesn't. And as he says later on, when Natasha asks him why it didn't work, it's because he's not in the universe. Like, he's not, he's literally not. He is nowhere to be found. The whole battle was amazing. Them going up into the silo was amazing. I particularly loved sort of the, I'll call it poetry. I think it's poetry. Like, you got, for Natasha has the shield. She's doing all the awesome Cap moves. She's like killing it with that shield.
Yes.
You've got one-armed Clint. And you have the Zolatron, which is an Ultron bot, which is actually Iron Man armor. Like, that's where Ultron made all his things. So we have a Civil War scene where you have Tony Stark, Cap, and Bucky fighting it out in the silo. And now in this What If episode, we are in the exact same silo with one hero who has a shield, one hero who is one armed, and one hero and one character who is an Iron Man armor bot. The poetry of the moment, I was just like, man. Yeah. I mean, like, I think that is the sole reason they gave Clint an arm and had Natasha get the Red Guardian.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, we're going to have this moment, and this is what we want to do. Yeah. And it's like they don't make a huge point of it. They don't like put a spotlight on it. But if you're watching it and you think about it, you're like, oh yeah. And so to have that moment and then go right into the end game in reverse moment. It's just, like I said, like this is a show that is 100% for hardcore MCU fans. And yeah. It's moments like that that really, really, really deliver.
Yeah, 1,000%. Just real quick, I took a picture of it on my phone. There it is.
Look at this there it is.
So good. It's so good.
It's a beautiful shot.
Yeah, it was beautifully done.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Emma, let's get into what did you think of this section here and what we got between Black Widow and Hawkeye, and also what we saw with Zola and what he was able to do and trying, as Michael said, trying to kind of outsmart them from his condescending place inside the computer mainframe.
Well, I loved that Natasha ordered a pizza. That was brilliant. Incredible. It reminded me of in Jessica Jones, there's an episode where she like finds out one person that is, you know, like connected to the Purple Man, and she calls them and she basically pretends that they've won something. So it was like very reminiscent of that. And I remember thinking it was brilliant on that show, and it was just as brilliant ordering a pizza here in this series. I loved the new like James Bond gadget they had, that like energy shield that they used to contain all of the like Ultron drones basically that were coming after them. And yeah, I mean, you know, that whole scene that was really a parallel with what was going on in Endgame and the reversing of their roles. And I mean, I recognized immediately what was going on. Like as soon as they grabbed hands, I went, okay, I know what's about to happen here. Especially because, you know, there is a level of it of, you know, Natasha in Endgame is saying, hey, I don't have anything else really left to live for. You do. And here it's reversed of she never had anybody to begin with, but he did, and he's lost everything. And so now he's giving up.
Right.
So it's, it was a fascinating parallel. just fucking Zola, man.
Well, she's fighting to save her family or the adopted family. And Clint lost his actual family.
So right.
That the reversal there is a great point you make.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Michael?
No, I also was just going to say on the ordering the pizza front, I loved more than anything that Ultron sounded like a grumpy old man.
Yes.
Like, who is this?
Was like, wait, what?
Like, he was like, who is this? Where are you? Like, it was like, it sounded like Ultron had fallen asleep in his Lazy Boy and like had been woken up by Natasha. It was just so perfect.
All right, let's move on to the last section here of the show. Zolatron says they should keep moving. He explains to Black Widow that he couldn't connect to the hive mind because Ultron is not within the observable universe. And Black Widow asks, well, where the hell is he? Well, we cut to the Watcher and Ultra Vision battling it out. This is awesome. Great animation. Great to see the Watcher and the kind of power that he has. And for those of us comic fans, a lot of what the Watcher used, we've seen in panels in comic books. The actual designs, the black spots within the power stuff, that was awesome to see. The Watcher is at a loss, and Ultron explains anything is possible in a multiverse after the Watcher does not understand how this is possible, and he sends the Watcher through walls of reality into this like forest area. Then he clears out the forest area to create a field to battle him. Ultron complains that the Watcher had all this power, all this ability to watch this entire multiverse, and all he did was watch instead of interfering. They have a back and forth about the Watcher's will, and the Watcher says, you don't know what my will is, son. And they keep battling through universes, and there's even this kind of interesting Galactus moment where we see Ultravision like eating a galaxy, eating a world. I was like, I didn't scream it's Galactus, but I thought it. they land in one of these worlds that are very similar to Earth, and Steve Rogers is being sworn in as president.
I know.
That's so interesting. Then Ultron descends slowly, and then after once again vilifying him for being just a Watcher, and they have this incredible sequence where every punch he lands on the Watcher is pushing him through a different boundary of the multiverse. We see including Wakanda and all these other places, and they end up on this snowy planet, and he tries to consume the Watcher's brain. and the Watcher eventually becomes strong enough to punch him off and escapes through a portal. Ultron says, run, watch, it doesn't matter. No one can stop him now. And then there's a black frame, and we cut to the Watcher as we come out of the black frame, and he is joined by evil or dark Doctor Strange, and he says, you want me to break my oath, don't you? And Doctor Strange says, oh, yes. And he says, oh, the Watcher says, you want me to say it? Yes, I do. And the Watcher says that I see now, I need your help. And we cut to black. And it's an awesome ending to this episode. Michael, I go back to you to start us off here. What did you think about this? And I mean, we'd already had two like pretty awesome cataclysmic battles. And then we have yet another one here that almost tops the first two with the scope of the battles as it goes through multiple universes.
Yeah, the multiversal slugfest was really, it was really, really something to behold. When the Watcher powers up, I noticed the same thing you did, which, like you were saying, like all those weird dots when he powers up is the power cosmic. Yes. Which if you're like a hardcore fan of the comics, that's the power that Galactus uses and the Silver Surfer uses and, you know, a lot of the bigger godlike beings use, and the Watcher is definitely one of those. I also saw somebody on Twitter point out that when he sort of makes his shield, the line work around the shields looks similar to what we've seen some of the characters doing in the Eternals.
Interesting.
And that's probably not accidental either, that we are stepping into an era of Marvel where we are getting into multiverses and Watchers and Galactuses and Heralds and Celestials and Eternals, and things are going to get weird, and I am here for it. Some cool sort of potential Easter eggs. I'm not saying any of these are true, but as they're sort of slugging through each of these realities and you're going super fast, you go through sort of a desert environment with what looks like a futuristic pyramid, which some people are thinking might be the Pyramid of Kang. Because Kang had a giant pyramid back in ancient Egypt. A cool sort of Easter egg about the President Rogers moment, which I don't think is intentional, but there is a sign in Times Square that's for Olympia the Musical, which is also in the episode when Loki takes over. Because when Loki takes over after the Avengers, they show him on the screen in Times Square. So a lot of people on Twitter were like, oh, well, then Nick Fury got Cap out and he beat Loki and whatever. And I don't think that's actually true. I think just they designed it. The animation team had designed a Times Square already, and they were like, oh, good, we can just
use
that
one. We're
going to
use the same Times Square, yeah.
But it's cool that it's the same Times Square. And then kind of the coolest one, we go through sort of a lava planet, and it has sort of this futuristic tower up in the distance that looks an awful lot like Darth Vader's base on
Mustafar. That's exactly what I was thinking. I was literally thinking the same thing.
Similar to the fact that when we were in the T'Challa episode and we were at the Collectors, there was an X-Wing kind of hidden away in all of his ships. I think this might be another, like, people are like, here it comes, baby, the crossover we've been waiting for. And I'm like, slow your roll. But a good little Easter egg. So, I mean, I think that, like, just all of that stuff, like you said, Johnny, when they were punching in, it's like, it's Wakanda, it's medieval times, it's Skrulls, it's this. It really is.
Oh, yeah.
It's just showing that we really, we all have an understanding of the multiverse now, thanks to this show. And now we just get to play in it, and it's awesome. Yeah. And then I just love, like, again, we all sort of assumed and guessed that we were going to get this whole like team up with a lot of the characters that we've seen throughout the season, but it just made so much sense. Like Uatu like has to get away from Ultravision, and he goes to the one place where Ultravision is going to have a hard time finding him, which is a dead universe. Because who would ever look in a dead universe? Like only the Watcher, because he's been watching, knows that there's this tiny little mirror dimension bubble with Doctor Strange in it, just living out his days. And so he goes to hide there because that's the only place he can hide, because that's how powerful this version of Ultron is. That's awesome.
Yeah, good points. Emma, what stood out for you as we wrapped up this episode in this section of the show?
Well, I noticed the Mustafar thing as well. And also will say that, you know, Marvel does publish Star Wars comics, so
it's a multiverse, y'all.
It's a multiverse, and we're all living in it. I think that it made an extreme amount of sense that the place that Uatu was basically forced to go, especially because he had a direct conflict with Strange Supreme, that basically he was like, no, you can't do this. Like, if you mess with the sort of circle of life, you are going to end the universe. So, like, what... So is this in some ways a repercussion for that, because again, now we're starting to see all of these different multiverses converge. I also loved how it went from the scene where there were like people looking over their shoulders and then they popped through and it was like characters in the exact same pose, same sort of expressions on their faces, but they turned into Skrulls because, you know, like Secret Invasion stuff. And I think that this did such a good job of building up to all of what we've seen so far converging into something and basically tying up all the little cliffhangers that every single one of these episodes ended on.
Yeah,
absolutely. Shannon, what do you say about this section? What do you say about the fights between them two? And he's shown up in this, as Michael pointed out, the small Evil Doctor Strange universe. And he says, you know, he's kind of banned himself to this universe, or he's been put in this universe to live out his days. But this is an evil Doctor Strange that learned his lesson right at the end. Mm-hmm. He was begging for his life. So is this a Doctor Strange that's actually going to be someone that we cheer for as the Watcher assembles this team to go after Ultravision? What do you think about this ending and that section of the Doctor Strange conversation?
I think being banished to this little mirror dimension has not made him not a dick. Like, he's still like, you're gonna make me say it, aren't you? Oh yeah. And how we didn't come to this last time, that Dark Doctor Strange should be called Dark Door Strange. It's thank you, Emma. Oh.
What?
Wow. In terms of the action and everything, all
that's not funny on any universe. Anyway, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Emma Fife would beg to disagree.
Dark Door Strange.
Oh my God.
Hashtag Dark Door Strange. Character beats the action. Vogel and Emma pretty much covered it. I mean, I love the literal reality shattering because of this fight. Ultron literally knocking him in to the next universe. Just awesome. And, you know, the Watcher always has kind of had a funny design. He's kind of got the giant baby head. But even when he powers up and gets that armor, it's like, okay, this is pretty fantastic. And I know we kind of think of this as a kind of a two-part finale. It's really three, because, you know, the end of the last episode is what led us into this. So, I mean, knowing that the next universe we're going to see, at least in terms of a battle, seems to be the one that Party Thor is in charge of.
Thor!
I mean, it's definitely, it has set the stage for an awesome finale. And also, there's still so much to cover for next season as well. This was a great episode.
Ultravision is going to harsh his mellow, that's for damn sure, when we get to that section. All right, any final words here for you guys? Any final words on this episode before we wrap up?
Ultron really makes Thanos look like a chump for how he uses those Infinity Stones.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, I mean, I wonder too if, because you know how in Loki they allude to the fact that there's just like endless Infinity Stones and they're basically just paperweights. Like, I wonder if has something to do with like Ultron and his ability to harness the power of the Infinity Stones. I don't know.
Well, along those lines, I did think like there's one point where the Watcher actually says, I think when Ultron like burst into his kind of crystal cavern and he's like, what's going on? This shouldn't be possible. And I did have a moment where I was like, well, if they hadn't fucking got rid of the TVA, this wouldn't be possible. Somebody would have shown up and nipped this in the bud.
I was thinking that too. When does the TVA get involved in this situation? Because they've presented it to us. So does the TVA exist in any of these multiverses?
Well,
what's going on?
No, because I could
time wise,
this,
where is this? I don't know.
Time wise, the multiverse exists because of what happened at the end of Loki. Like there were other universes to a degree, but the TVA was sort of trimming and hedging and clipping and pruning. And my understanding of why they put What If after the Loki series is what we are now experiencing is the actual multiverse that happens in the absence of a TVA.
Yeah. But also, I was just thinking that Doctor Strange, he still has the Eye of Agamotto because it never, Infinity War never happened in his universe.
Correct. Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, Go ahead.
Isn't that an Infinity Stone? Doesn't he have the Infinity
Stone? The Time Stone, yeah. is in it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's what she's saying. She's saying
that, that's what I'm saying.
That I'm not going to say it. The Doctor Strange from that episode, he has the Eye of Agamotto. From his universe, he still has it.
From his universe, got
it. Yeah, from his universe.
He's got it. And there are, and I don't know, you know, I mean, we'll see if that's the way they go with this finale, but there are other universes that have other Infinity Stones. Like, they all, I mean, you could have an entire Guardians of the Multiverse, and they could all Infinity Stone up and come and just Infinity Stone the shit out of Ultron. So we'll see what happens.
Somebody give Captain Marvel.
Oh, yeah, because remember, don't they have one of the Infinity Stones on the jet at the end of the Zombies episode?
Yeah.
Yeah, they have the Mind Stone.
Yeah, so I'm now thinking that, like, everybody at the end of the episodes, they're going to come together because they've all got, like, one Infinity Stone.
This better be an hour-long fucking episode. Don't give me no half-an-hour episode of this shit. I want to see more. All right, well, there you go. That's our spoiler review of episode 8 here of the season 1 of What If Ultron won. Hope you enjoyed it. Thank you very much for joining us for this one. Shannon, what do we have to tell them?
Yeah, if you'd like to follow us on social media, on Twitter, it's @geek_buddies. On Instagram, @the_geek_buddies. If you'd like to follow me on social media, on Twitter, it's @Shannon_McClung. On Instagram, @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. If you would like to follow Mr. Vogel, it is @MK2. And if you would like to follow Mr. Roca, it is @TheRocaSays.
Thank you. And Mikey?
Whether you like the heroes of the multiverse or like John Roca, you just really respect the hell out of a sociopath. You have people here that are your people. We love what we're doing. We love you guys joining us. We want to continue to do this. So if you would like to help us, here's what you can do. You can hit that like button below. Subscribe to John's Outlaw Nation page. There's a ton of awesome content. Leave your comments below. What did you think of this episode? Where do you think we're going next week? Where do you want to see What If go next? If you are listening to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or anywhere where podcasts are available, leave us some stars, leave us some comments. It helps us go up in the rankings so that more people can find us. And as always, the best thing that you guys can do is retweet this video, post it on your socials, and let everybody know that Geek Buddies are some cool and classy peeps that are here to hang out with you.
Yeah. I'd like to remind you, if I was a sociopath, it would be the Geek Buddy. That's it. And thank you to Emma Fife, who's joined us again. Emma, you're the best. Tell people where they can find you and everything going on, please.
Well, I am @EmmaFife all over the internet, wherever Emma Fifes are sold. I've got a bunch of projects up on the Fandom Games YouTube channel, as well as on the game section of the main Fandom website. I've got my most recent piece is about the evolution of the massively multiplayer online RPG to coincide with the release of Amazon Studios' New World, which just came out this week. And then everything else that I'm working on, and there's a lot of cool things I can't talk about. So make sure you're following me on Twitter and you'll hear about them someday.
There you go. All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Do everything Michael and Shannon and Emma said, and come back and join us next week. And we'll talk about whether we can do a live spoiler review finale for the finale here of What If. And we'll let you know very soon about that. All right. Take care of yourselves. Be well. And that's it from us here at the
Geek
Buddies.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's H-Y-P-E-R-T-H-E-T-I-C-A-L.